Hello, everyone. We are continuing on with Thomas Manton and Exposition with Notes upon the Epistle of Jude. We're still in verse 9. Yet Michael the archangel, when contending with the devil, he disputed about the body of Moses, durst not bring against him a railing accusation, but said, "The Lord rebuke thee." And last time we did observations 5 through 8, which regarded discussion about the body of Moses, and that he durst not, so those words of the verse. And Lord willing, we're going to continue on here with observation 9, and I will go ahead and start. So observation 9, the next point is from that a railing accusation. In the original, it is the judgment or sentence of blasphemy or evil speaking. The meaning is such unworthy language as would not become any serious judgment or process, and because the angel was a party, not a judge, we translate it not a railing judgment, but a railing accusation. So thence observe that to the worst adversary in the best cause, railing and reviling must not be used. Michael, when contending with the devil about the body of Moses, etc. The reasons are, number one, because such reproaches come from an evil principle, contempt or passion, both of which argue pride. One that overvalues himself disdains others and storms when he is crossed, as a full stream roars and swells when it meets with a dam and obstruction. Number two, such reproaches are most unsuitable to matters of religion. The God of peace will not be served with a wrathful spirit, and Christ's warfare needs no carnal weapons. Christianity of all religions is the meekest and most humble. The foundation of it is the Lamb slain, and the consignation and sealing of it is by the Spirit, who descended in the form of a dove, both emblems of a modest humility. And should a meek religion be defended by the violence and fury of our passions? Cursing does ill become them that are called to inherit a blessing. 1 Peter 3, verse 9. Number three, they are flatly against the word. The scripture is a great friend to the peace of human societies, for it condemns the least offensive word and gesture. Isaiah 58, verse 9, thou shalt put away from thee the yoke and the putting forth of the finger, a gesture of indignation. And therefore God would have it laid aside, even the putting forth of the finger, as well as the yoke broken. So see Matthew 5:22. But I say unto you, whoever is angry with his brother without a cause is in danger of the judgment, and whosoever shall say unto his brother, Raca, is in danger of the council, and whosoever shall say, thou fool, shall be in danger of hellfire. The scribes and the Pharisees had restrained the sixth commandment to the gross act of murder. Christ tells them that rash anger, with all the expressions of it, is murder. His expressions allude to the courts of the Jews. Three there were, especially among them, the lowest, the middle, and the highest. Their lowest judicatory was of three men who took cognizance of lighter matters, as injuries and strifes about goods and things of a pecuniary concernment. This court was set up in lesser towns that had few inhabitants. The second court was of 23 men, so 23 men before whom the weightiest causes were brought, concerning the life of a man, all capital crimes, or of an ox that had gored a man or a woman, or in case of any abominable commixtion with a beast, if a woman approached to a beast, etc., Leviticus 20, verse 16. This court was set up in all the cities of Palestine and was called the Lesser Sanhedrin, and because Jerusalem was the head city, the seat of the prince and the temple was there, therefore in that city were two of the lesser Sanhedrins. The lower sat in the gate of the mountain, that is, the gate which gave entrance to the mountain of the temple, and the other, being the higher, sat in the gate of Ezra near the porch of the temple. Now, the third judicatory was the greater Sanhedrin, which consisted of 70 men in imitation of the counsel of God to Moses, Numbers 11:16. This was the highest judicatory from whence there was no appeal, as there might be from the lower courts to this. Into this assembly were chosen such as did excel others for nobility and wisdom, and that by a solemn laying on of hands. Strangers or unclean persons or common people might not come nigh unto them. To this tribunal were referred all doubtful matters too hard for inferior courts to decide, Deuteronomy 17:8-9, as also all things that did belong to the 12 tribes or to the whole nation, all things that concerned the high priest, matters of war and peace, the false prophet, etc. Therefore, Christ says, Luke 13:33, it cannot be that a prophet should perish out of Jerusalem, that being the city where the Sanhedrin sat. By this court was Christ condemned, and the apostles, Acts 4:5, and Stephen, Acts 7:7, and Paul, Acts 23:1. They sat in a part of the temple called Gasith. Their punishments were strangling, beheading, stoning, burning. Those that were condemned to be burned were burnt in the Valley of Hinnom. And in great cases, besides his corporeal death, the malefactor was appointed and accursed to the judgment of hell. Now let me apply all this to the present case. Christ does not meddle with the lowest court and the judgment of three men, because capital matters did not belong to their cognizance, and his intent is to show what a capital matter the least expression of anger is. Whosoever is angry with his brother without a cause, he says, is in danger of judgment, that is, of the judgment of the 23 men, to show that rash anger is before God a capital matter. And whosoever shall say to his brother, Raca, thou vain and witless fellow, this was the lowest kind of contumely then in use. Some make it only an interjection of indignation, is in danger of the council, that is, of the Sanhedrin, which notes that anger expressed, though in the lowest way, is a higher fault than single or bare anger, as the fault was greater for which they appeared before the higher Sanhedrin than that for which they appeared before the 23 judges. But whosoever shall say, thou fool, this notes a higher contempt, as implying a charge, not only of weakness of nature, but of sin and wickedness. He is in danger of hellfire, which was the highest judgment of the Sanhedrin, to burn them in the Valley of Hinnom, and to leave them accursed till the Lord come. And so, proportionably, it notes the greatness of the crime which is committed in slandering and reproaching our brethren. It is a most odious sin before God, for in allusion to man's judgment, he shows that though there be degrees in the sin and will be in the punishment, yet the whole kind is very displeasing to the Lord. Number four, because reproaches have an influence and do exasperate rather than convince. The dog that follows the game with barking and bawling loses the prey, and there is not a more likely way to undermine the truth than an unseemly defense of it. Satan is mightily gratified, if men had eyes to see it, with the ill managing of God's cause. Use number one. First, it serves for information to show us the vanity of those excuses by which men would disguise their wrath and passion. What will you plead? I am in the right way. It is God's cause. Answer, passion is blind and cannot judge. James 1:20, the wrath of man worketh not the righteousness of God. The wrong way may be usually described by the excesses and violences of those that are engaged in it. If we be in the right, extremities and furies of passion are not lawful. Our religious affections may overset us. When religion, which should limit us, is made a party to engage them, it is hard to keep bounds. A stone, the higher the place from where it falls, gives the more dangerous blow. So the higher the matter about which we contend, usually our anger falls with the more violence and is the more unmortified because of the pretense of zeal. If the erring parties, the parties in error, offend through ignorance, remember a bone out of joint must be settled again with a gentle hand. Galatians 6 verse 1. Are the opposite stubborn? In meekness instruct those that oppose themselves. 2 Timothy 2:25. When their absurd opposing is apt to tempt us to rage, passion, and reproach, we must contain ourselves. The hasty disciples knew not what spirit they were of. Here's a question. Do they provoke, revile, or wrong us first? The answer, the railing and ill-dealing of another does not dissolve the bond of our duty to God. To return injury for injury is but to act over their sin, to do their sin over again. It was bad in them, it is worse in us. For he that sins by example sins doubly, as having had experience of the odiousness of it in another. Revenge and injury differ only in order of time. The one is first, the other second in the fault, and it was no excuse to Adam that he was not first in the transgression. Christianity teaches us a rare way of overcoming injuries, not only by patience, but doing good to those that wrong us. Romans 12, 17 and 1 Peter 3, verse 9, render not reviling for reviling, but contrariwise, blessing. We have for our pattern Christ, who being reviled, reviled not again, 1 Peter 2:23, and herein he was imitated by his disciples in 1 Corinthians 4:13, being defamed, we entreat, a motto which I would have prefixed to all rejoinders or replies to a virulent opposition. Calvin's modesty concerning Luther is notable. Though he should call me a devil, yet God forbid I should account him an eminent servant of Christ. It was once an argument for the truth of our religion that the scriptures contained a doctrine that could not be of men as forbidding revenge, which is so sweet to nature and commanding us to do good to them that hate us. And here's another objection. But shall I suffer myself and in me the cause of Christ to be trampled upon? Manton's answer, you are allowed a modest vindication of the truth and your own innocency. Proverbs 26, 4-5. Answer not a fool according to his folly, lest thou be like him. Answer a fool according to his folly, lest he be wise in his own conceit. You will say, here is a hot and cold in one breath, or this seems like a contradiction. I answer, Solomon speaks of a scoffing, railing fool, and the meaning is, do not imitate him in his foolish passion. This were to be evil because he is so, and it is against reason that because I am sensible of indecent carriage in him, therefore I should allow it in myself. But yet answer him, that is to the purpose, and with solid reason, beat down his presumption and ignorance with a meek but a strong reply, such as may check his pride, but not imitate his folly. It is observable when it was said of Christ in John 8, 48 and 49, thou art a Samaritan and hast a devil, he answered not a word to the personal reproach, but where his commission was touched, to that he replied, saying, I have not a devil, but I honor my Father. It is but weakness of mind or strength of passion to regard personal invectives. In short, we may answer, but not with harsh and contumelious language. Use number two, secondly, here is a direction to public persons and those that can handle the pen of the writer. Passion is apt to taint our religious defenses, but check it. Michael durst not bring a railing accusation. Leave all unhandsomeness of prosecution to them that defend an evil cause. The servant of God must be gentle and patient. 2 Timothy 2:24. Opprobrious language does but darken a just quarrel and contention. But you will say, may we not reprove the sins of men, and that somewhat sharply? I answer, yea, it is lawful, as appears both by the practice of the prophets and angels, yea, of Christ himself, and also by the precepts of the word. Paul said, Titus 1:7, that a bishop must not be self-willed and soon angry. And yet, in verse 13, he bids him to rebuke some gainsayers sharply. There is a great deal of difference between railing and a reproof. A sermon without some warmth and keenness in it is but like a cold ration. Men that speak from their brain will speak coldly, because they only declaim against things for fashion's sake, without any sense or touch upon their hearts. An affectionate pleading for Christ is like strong water, whereas a formal narration is but like river waters without any strength and vigor. They that love Christ will be zealous for his truths and ordinances, and zeal cannot deliver itself without some smartness and earnestness. But a cold indifferency is more tame and flat. But then this must be done with great caution. You had need look to your spirits, partly because Satan loves to corrupt a religious affection, and partly because in these businesses, God is not only engaged, but ourselves. And many times the savor of the main river is lost when it is mingled with other streams. Too often, we begin in the spirit and end in the flesh. The cautions which I shall give respect, 1, the object or cause, 2, the persons, 3, the manner, 4, the principle, and 5, the end or purpose. 1, the cause must be regarded that it be real and weighty. Weighty it must be. It is preposterous to be all of a fire about questionable truths and matters of a less regard. The flaming sword was set about paradise. And real it must be. The sin we reprove must be manifest, and the faults we charge apparent. Matthew 5:22, if any be angry with his brother without a cause, etc. Otherwise, Christ and his apostles called raca, Matthew 23:17, O fools and blind, and Luke 24:25, O fools and slow of heart to believe, etc., and Galatians 3:1, O foolish Galatians, and James 2:20, O vain man, etc. But in all these cases there was a cause. False and rash imputations are but railing. Zeal being a fierce and strong passion, you must not let it fly upon the throat of anything but what is certainly evil. 2, the persons must be considered. Weak sinners are to be distinguished from the malicious, and the tractable from the obstinate. God's tender lambs, though straying, must be gently reduced. Put a difference, says our apostle in verse 19. Ocolampadius said to Pharaoh, who was a good man but a little too violent, you were not sent to revile but to preach the gospel. But on the other side, there is a difference to be used in the case of hypocrites that gain by that repute and esteem which they have. Christ himself inveighed against the Pharisees in the roughest ways, Matthew 23, woe unto you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, etc. We may pluck off the disguise from a hypocrite, especially when they seduce and deceive the miserable multitude by an opinion of holiness. The Pharisees and Sadducees, to keep up their repute, submitted to John's baptism. But does he treat them gently? No, Matthew 3, verse 7, O generation of vipers, etc. So Paul to Elymas the sorcerer, Acts 13, O thou full of all subtlety and mischief, thou child of the devil, and enemy of all righteousness, wilt thou not cease to pervert the holy ways of the Lord? In these cases, there is a regard had to others, that they may not perish by too good an opinion of such deceivers. And here that of Solomon is of regard, Proverbs 28, verse 4, they that forsake the law praise the wicked, and they that keep the law set themselves against them, a vigorous opposition does better here than a cold dislike. Number three, for the manner, with our zeal we should still manifest love and compassion, and our way of dealing must rather be rational than passionate. There is a holy contemporization of zeal and meekness if we could hit upon it. The same Spirit, Holy Spirit, that appeared in cloven tongues of fire appeared also in the form of a dove. The work of righteousness may be sown in peace, James 3:18. The church's garden thrives by the cool gales of the north wind as well as the sultry heat of the south, Canticles or Song of Solomon 4, verse 16. God's cause should neither be neglected nor disparaged by an indiscreet carriage. Number four, concerning the principle, see that it be good. It must not be zeal for our private concernments, but for the glory of God. Not a strange fire, but a holy fire. Moses was the meekest man upon the earth in his own cause, Numbers 12, verse 3. When Miriam and Aram spake against Moses, the man Moses was meek above all men of the earth. When our zealous contests come from a heart bleeding for God's dishonor, from hatred of sin, a fear of the public, then they are right. Lot was vexed not with Sodom's injuries, but Sodom's filthiness, 2 Peter 2, verse 8. When love of our neighbor, desire of his amendment, we are loath to suffer sin upon him, puts us upon this earnestness, our heart is upright with God. But when we seek to disgrace the men rather than condemn the sins, and we rage most upon the hazard of our own interest, and can be earnest against some sins and errors, and comply with worse, it is not zeal for God, but for a party. And number five, great regard must be had to the end or purpose. A reproof aims at the conviction or conversion of a sinner, but censure at his disgrace and confusion. Our aim must be as right as our passion is strong. Whatever we do must not be done out of a spirit of ostentation and popularity, or to keep up a devotion to our own interests. John Baptist sharply reproved the Pharisees, not when contemning his person, but when coming to his baptism. That's the end of observation number 9. Observation 10, there remains nothing of the ninth verse to be discussed but the last clause, "The Lord rebuke thee." Though Michael does not rail, yet he refers the matter to God. From that, observe that in religious contests, we must carry on the opposition, though not in an unseemly manner. Michael does not let Satan alone, so we must not let errors alone, and the devil carry it clearly without rub or opposition. Many, under a pretense of meekness, are still and silent in the cause of Christ. Cursed is this peace and meekness when we let the envious man sow his tares and we never give warning. God's messengers are compared to watchful dogs. When the wolf comes, we must bark. If the sleepy world be troubled at it, we must bear their reproach. In observation 11, again he refers it to God, who is the fittest patron of his own causes. In our contests about religion, God must especially be sought unto for a blessing. Michael contended, but said, "The Lord rebuke thee." Disputing times should also be praying times. Prejudices will never vanish till God send out his light and truth, Psalm 43, verse 3. And if the devil be not prayed down, as well as disputed down, little good comes of our contests. All right, and that is the end of verse 9. And Lord willing, we'll plan to continue on next time. But until then, go in a meek and humble heart with a concern for Christ and his glory and a concern for the souls of others and how we approach others and deal with our neighbors. And Lord willing, we'll talk to you again soon.